The Exchange Daily Podcast is brought to you by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Brady Carlson in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This week around the country, adjunct professors have been staging protests, holding teach-ins, and in some cases, walking out of classes. They say it's time the higher education system reconsiders a system in which a majority of college courses are taught not by tenured faculty, but by adjuncts who receive lower pay, fewer benefits, and less job security than full-time professors. Some adjunct professor jobs are staffed by professionals who have other full-time employment, but others are PhDs hoping to find a tenure-track position, but instead cobble together course loads at multiple institutions each semester. Meanwhile, administrators say adjuncts help deal with tight budgets and offer more flexibility and opportunities for students. And the debate over adjuncts is part of a larger conversation about the changing roles of higher education in society and the economy. Today on The Exchange, the debate about the growing reliance on adjunct professors. And let's hear from you. Are you an adjunct? What's been your experience? What would you like to see happen when it comes to the individuals who teach colleges and university courses? What questions do you have about this debate? Join us. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send an email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have a range of guests joining us with a wide variety of perspectives during this hour's discussion. Joining us for the first part of the show in studio is Dana Biscotti-Miskowski. She's been an adjunct professor for 11 years. She teaches media and screenwriting courses at UNH Manchester. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And joining me by phone from Washington, D.C. is Colleen Flatt, faculty reporter for Inside Higher Ed, and welcome to you as well.
Thanks.
Well, Colleen, let's start about talking about National Adjunct Walkout Day, which took place yesterday. Can you give us a little of the background of how that came to be and then what we saw yesterday?
Sure. So basically, this idea was posed sort of as a what if on social media back in October by an adjunct professor, a lecturer of writing at San Jose State University in California. And sort of the idea behind it was just backing up a little bit, adjunct professors sometimes say that their higher education's invisible class, meaning that, you know, when they're standing in front of a class, they look like a quote-unquote, you know, regular tenure-line professor. You know, they, in many instances, have the same level of education and experience, but in many cases, they are, paid significantly less on a per-course basis. They lack institutional support, and they don't have a lot of job security. So the idea behind National Adjunct Walkout Day, I think, was really appealing and kind of took off like a wildfire because it turned that invisibility on its head, and it sought to sort of make visible, in a very significant, real way, just how important adjunct professors are to higher education and, you know, the fact that they make up now the majority of the teaching force.
Now, many of the participants in National Adjunct Walkout Day didn't literally walk out, although
right.
Some did. So what were the forms that these protests and educational work, as they've called it, took yesterday?
Right. So, you know, I think the idea was really appealing to a lot of people. But as, talks about it got a little bit more realistic, a lot of adjuncts on unionized campuses realized that their contracts prevented them from walking out with a no-strike clause. Also, many, many states have laws that prohibit public employees from striking. And then other adjuncts sort of philosophically opposed, I would say a minority, though, but a significant number philosophically opposed walking out on their students, you know, regardless of their working conditions. So very quickly the conversation moved to alternative forms of protest, And there were many teach-ins yesterday where adjunct professors took 10 or 15 minutes in their classes to talk about their working conditions, because a lot of students still don't know, you know, sort of what they are. And the fact that there is sort of a difference between a tenure line professor and an adjunct professor. We saw rallies on campuses, some pretty creative protests, actually, at the University of California at Santa Cruz. Adjuncts there made up a sort of fictional saint, Saint Precaria, which is sort of a play on the idea of the precariat, the proletariat, or precarious in the proletariat. And walked around campus with this basically papier-mâché giant puppet sort of, you know, bringing a quirky sort of attention to their cause. But we also did see a few walkouts, mostly on the West Coast. Seattle University had a walkout with tenure-line professors, adjunct students, several hundred people attended. And there were similar, but I would say less well-attended walkouts at San Francisco Art Institute and the University of Arizona as well.
Dana, I didn't hear about any papier-mâché puppets in this state for National Adjunct Walkout Day, but what kind of activity did we have? For example, what did you do when you participated yesterday?
So I taught in, but boy, I wish I'd thought of the puppet idea. you know, so I taught in. As it happens, the one day I teach a week is Wednesday, and I teach two courses plus an independent study. And I was not going to walk out on my students. This is not an issue I have with my students at all. They're the best students in the world. So what I did was I took 15 minutes per class, and I presented what an adjunct is. And my students, by and large, had no idea.
Really?
Yeah. What we did, you know, how low our pay was, no benefits. Although when I started listing this off, they said, oh, that's why, you know, so-and-so is always going out to his car to get his stuff. And, you know, I said, yep, that's my office, my car. Right.
So that that seems to prove what you were talking about earlier, Colleen, about the invisible piece of being an adjunct, that you're there in the classroom. And so people might not even know that an adjunct might have a very different life than someone who works full time and has tenure at the university.
And I should mention, too, one other part about the alternative protests yesterday were that, you know, I think I mentioned before, most adjuncts lack job security. So there were a significant number of adjuncts who did express a desire to walk out. But because they were, you know, afraid of maybe being the only one to do it on their campus, they thought that if they did, they would, you know, not be reappointed next year or be fired. And so that was another sort of factor in how it all played out yesterday.
There can be a number of, and I saw a number of social media posts yesterday where adjuncts and those supporting them said they were proud of those who participated. Some said they were disappointed by those who were silent. But there can be a lot of reasons why someone might not participate. One might be that they're concerned about their job prospects going forward. Another might be, you said, some people actually disagreed with the idea of this particular day.
Right. I mean, it sounds like, Dana, you know, sort of didn't like the idea of walking out on her students. And I think a lot of people, you know, felt like she did, that this is a problem between me and my administration, not my students. So rather than cancel class today, you know, let me talk to my students about this. Let me use this as an educational opportunity to, you know, share with them exactly how, you know, adjuncts say their tuition dollars are being spent.
Dana, you mentioned some of the hidden pieces that your students didn't know. For example, that there were no benefits when you teach an adjunct course.
Right.
What are some of those other hidden pieces that someone might take for granted and say, oh, well, a person who teaches at a college or university has X with them. They might have an office, and that might not necessarily be the case. What are some of those other
right.
hidden pieces that people might not know about?
Well, they assumed we had offices and just didn't choose to use them, maybe. So I told them where some office space was set aside for us, but that I've been told in the past, no, I cannot keep things there. So I can't keep my extra books there. I can't keep extra papers. I really can't work there because all of my stuff ends up in transition, mostly at home in my home office. So I'm lucky to have some space at home. But they didn't realize that, you know, I have a son who would love to take some classes at, you know, UNH, and we don't get any educational benefits. I've been there 11 years. Hello, that seems like a no-brainer.
And at many universities and colleges, full-time faculty and staff often, they get that benefit for themselves and for
I would be better off working as a janitor at UNH because I would get better pay. I would get benefits. My son could go to school for the benefits. But, you know, unfortunately, I fell in love with teaching and I fell in love with my students and I don't want to leave them. But I'm faced, you know, I've been a full-time mom, too, until April last year. So now I'm faced with a prospect. What do I do next? As a full-time mom, a part-time teaching schedule worked perfectly. And I say part-time, but last year I was going through the numbers this morning, and last year I taught 13 classes at two different schools. Hmm. And when I look at this spring's schedule at UNH Manchester, I'm teaching two classes, and I'm teaching an independent study. We have two full-time professors who are each teaching two classes, and one of them has an independent study. And then we have six adjuncts, and most of them are teaching one class and then my schedule. But then I'm looking for other classes. So I'm teaching a class in Peterborough for high school students coming up in another week or so. So I'm just trying to add on more and more classes to try to, you know, make my income look a little respectable.
Today on The Exchange, reassessing the roles of adjuncts as the number of teaching positions filled by non-tenure track, often part-time adjunct professors has increased. This group gains attention for what it describes as low pay, few to no benefits, and lack of job security. But with tough financial times at higher ed institutions across the country, some schools say there's just not enough money. We hope you'll join us with your comments and questions as well at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, and exchange at nhpr.org. Colleen, we have just about a minute before our break, but how often is it that we see cases like Dana's where adjuncts are actually teaching, if not full-time, then certainly close to full-time, versus that more traditional idea of an adjunct who might be a full-time professional who teaches a course or two on the side of their full-time career?
Right. That's actually a very good question, and there's a lot of, I guess there's sort of a data problem on that issue. It's very hard to gather data about adjuncts because they are so decentralized. You know, they in many cases don't have offices on campus. Their email addresses are hard to find. They travel from one campus to the other. But it's an absolute fact that they are, you know, their numbers are growing, they're proliferating, and many, many more adjuncts than, you know, we saw even 10 years ago now are working, sort of trying to, you know, cobble together a full-time job with essentially whatever work they can get at various institutions in their regions, and sometimes driving, you know, hours a day, taking trains, you know, buses, all these different things. It can be very difficult for the adjuncts who would like full-time work and can't find it.
More about adjunct professors after the break, so stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Brady Carlson. Today on The Exchange, a look at adjunct professors and their efforts to organize for better pay and benefits. Call in with your thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR, or send an email to exchange at nhpr.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. Joining me in the studio is Dana Biscotti-Miskowski, adjunct professor at UNH Manchester. She's been an adjunct for 11 years. She teaches media and screenwriting classes. Joining us by phone from Washington is Colleen Flaherty, faculty reporter for Inside Higher Ed. And joining us now is Dan King, president and CEO of the American Association of University Administrators. Dan King, great to have you with us today.
Well, thanks very much, Brady. It's good to be here.
Now, this is a change in the way that colleges and universities have staffed courses over the years. It used to be that most courses were taught by full-time professors, and we have seen a growing number of adjuncts filling those roles. What are some of the factors that you have seen that have made those changes happen?
Well, you're right. Over the last 50 years or so, we have and are employing a lot more adjuncts than we used to. You've characterized it exactly correctly. So I think we do this for three reasons. By and large, using adjuncts gives us flexibility that we need more of now than we used to. Colleges are rapidly changing environments with respect to their constituent demands. So students' demands for majors are changing. Students' demands for courses are changing. And using adjuncts rather than tenured and tenure-track faculty gives us some flexibility. We're seeing the development of a lot of new specialized expertise that needs to be brought into the classroom, and so we use adjuncts to satisfy that in a way that we didn't before. And, of course, we continue to use adjuncts to meet unanticipated or emergency needs. So a faculty member resigns late in the year where that's out of the recruiting cycle, and so you use adjuncts to backfill for a year. But the bottom line is, I think, that more and more, our budgets are being stretched. We have fewer resources to run the university with, and adjuncts cost less to employ.
And Colleen, that's something that you hear often, is that this is, you know, especially you hear about public university systems and state government saying, you know, there's just not as much money able to put toward higher education as there used to be. And so that means the money's got to come from somewhere. So you find ways to cut costs. And this is one way to do that.
Right. That is, I think there's no doubt that colleges and universities are under pressure from all sides, you know, about their budgets. But, you know, it's not, but I think that it's important to ask, you know, sort of not to get lost in this debate, the effect on student learning. I think a lot of adjuncts would say that it's great to bring in adjuncts for, you know, their specialized expertise, but at a lot of institutions, it is adjuncts who are teaching your very basic, you know, first-year writing courses, intro-level humanities, social sciences, and to a lesser extent, natural sciences courses. And, you know, with all the questions about retention in higher education and, you know, completion, people finishing their degrees, you know, adjuncts say that they can't be the effective instructors that they need to be, you know, in those very important years for students, first and second year, without the kind of institutional supports that they need, like, as Dana mentioned, an office in which to meet with students, you know, for office hours, you know, and also just this idea that they'll be there the next semester. You know, if students want to use them as a mentor or ask them later on down the line for recommendation letters, things like that.
There's a lot of topics to go back through here from what we've already discussed here, but I did want to come back to one that Dan mentioned a moment ago, Dana, flexibility. And that's something that the college and university can benefit from. An adjunct can offer a class early in the morning or late at night that might not be available. And it can also, in some cases, work for the instructor, him or herself. As you mentioned, that was a good schedule for you when you were a full-time mom and looking to teach courses part-time.
Right.
Not necessarily always the case for everyone,
right,
but that's one of the other pieces of flexibility that can come up.
Sure, yeah. And not only the time schedule, but what Dan mentioned with the specialized expertise and students, you know, seeking those extra interesting courses that are ever-changing with our changing world. And actually, I was brought in specifically to teach screenwriting at first because they had requests from students to learn screenwriting, and they had nobody with that expertise. And I had that. And then it just happened that because of my corporate communications background and some of my radio background, I could teach other classes. And so I've expanded from there.
Colleen, is there a divide at all between places where there is a higher population and a more urban environment where there might be multiple schools geographically close to each other, where an adjunct might more easily be able to take an expertise like Dana's and put together a more or less full-time schedule versus a place like New Hampshire where there might not be a call because of the geographic space between schools and the lower population that you might not be able to put together a full-time course load?
Right. I think that that's a good question. I think that you could sort of look at it from a couple different angles. I think maybe your hypothesis could work out for a lot of adjuncts, but we also have to remember that cities, you know, where there are more colleges and universities, they attract a lot more, people who want to be there, you know, for higher education, for, industry. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I've talked to a lot of adjuncts who have worked in New York City, and so that it's very hard to find a job there because there are just so many adjuncts. There are so many graduate students who are working as adjuncts as they finish their dissertations. I talked to one adjunct last year who finally just sort of quit the business. He was a philosophy professor, and he was working, 15, 16-hour days, traveling all through the tri-state area, trying to put a roof over his head and food on the table, hopefully with a little bit left over. And he just said he couldn't after a while. It was just too much.
Dan, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to what Colleen had said a little while ago, asking that question about the effect on student learning. Does it raise concerns then when you might have someone who is spending an inordinate amount of time in the car driving from course to course or might not have the institutional support like an office, and they're teaching those introductory courses that make a big difference for students as they start their college careers?
Well, I think that it does, but I need to preface this by saying, there are at least two arguments about adjuncts. One is that adjuncts are really good and they should be paid more. And the other is that students deserve full-time faculty, and implicit in that is that full-time faculty are better than adjuncts, and so that might argue for the continued discrepancy in salaries. I actually come down on the first of those. I think adjuncts can be as effective as full-time faculty. I think more significantly what we're talking about is that colleges and universities have been very guilty of not treating adjuncts as faculty. So you're right. We don't give them offices, and we should. Even if someone is there just part-time, there ought to be an office available where that person can confer with students, where that person can engage in some scholarship if they need some private area to engage in scholarship. We don't typically engage adjuncts in the organizational community. We don't include them in curriculum decisions. We don't include them in governance. We don't often even include them and allow them to choose a textbook. We don't take their scheduling preferences into account often. We simply don't treat them with the respect that we treat full-time faculty. We ought to do those things, but many of those things cost money because if we ask people to engage in service to the university, we should compensate them for that. So, we're back to this kind of chicken and egg thing. Where do I get the money or how do I spend the money? It's a dilemma for us, but it's something that we need to take on. We absolutely need to take that on. The other thing that I think that we should think about as administrators and that we talk about in my organization frequently is the notion of institutions collaborating wherever they're geographically able to do that, and so that somebody can hire some small universities together can hire a professor of philosophy where none of the three could support one by themselves. And that gives the faculty member a sense of being a full-time faculty member. It gives them a salary, gives them a full-time salary, gives them benefits, but has them serving and teaching at three different institutions, say. But there are other models, and we need to be creative about how we envision and develop those models. We simply have to change from the status quo.
Lots of questions that I have, certainly, but I want to give our listeners a chance to join us on the role of adjuncts at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Robert is calling in from Lebanon. Hi, Robert. You're on The Exchange.
Hi there. This is Robert. First of all, I want to say thank you very much to Southern University. I'm the former dean of Lebanon College, and we've experienced a lot of these problems firsthand. And we're no longer have a college because we didn't, I think, over the last 5 or 6 years, really take on the issue of contingency. So I want to thank Bill, first of all, for being there for us, and SNHU was there for Lebanon College. Second, I just wanted to make sure that we focus on where some cost savings can actually occur, and that is in the growing administrative ranks that claim to be involved in oversight and making sure that the programs and the adjuncts themselves are being assessed. But we need to make sure that 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 the full-time ranks who used to do those duties are also fortified. So, so first of all, thank you, and second of all, I'd like to know Bill's thoughts on how to make those cost-saving steps.
Well, Bill Gillett of Southern New Hampshire University will be joining us in a few minutes on the program. But Robert, great questions. Thanks so much for calling. I wanted to start with you, Colleen. What did you make of what Robert was saying about the idea that that this is an issue not simply for the adjuncts themselves, but for faculty as a whole?
Right. That's actually an argument that I'm hearing a lot more recently. The Delphi Project at the University of Southern California just released a report saying pretty much exactly that, that higher education is reaching some sort of critical point. We're not sure, you know, sort of exactly when, but it's imminent that, you know, when you, you know, rely almost entirely or increasingly entirely on contingent faculty, all those other things that they would have done, like service, mentoring, participating in you know, shared governance, planning curriculum, you know, and just sort of being part of university life. You know, all of that work has to get shifted onto the backs of tenure line faculty who are increasingly facing, you know, their own workload concerns and fundraising concerns. And then you have the issues of student learning. So I absolutely think that, you know, while this for a long time has been framed as sort of a human rights issue, if you will, it is really, you know, I think increasingly from what I'm hearing being framed as, you know, a higher education issue, sort of, and a really an American issue.
Robert, thanks so much for that call. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Let's go now to Claire, who's calling from South Berwick, Maine. Hi, Claire. You're on the exchange.
Hi there. I've taught at a number of colleges in the area, in the Seacoast area, and I've had two experiences which really point out that adjuncts are not paid for any prep or grading time for the most part. In one case, I was teaching full time, and they decided, this was down at the shipyard through Central Texas College, and they decided that they wanted to fire everyone who was full time, I was full time, and hire them back, paying them just for the hours they were teaching. And when we calculated that, we realized we would be making less than minimum wage at that point. And so most people did not take them up on that particular offer and went elsewhere. The other thing is, about 10 years later, I went to work for a large corporation as a training coordinator. And I was shocked to discover that in business, they normally allow 4 to 6 hours of preparation for every hour of classroom. And plus, I was paid about 3 times as much as I had ever made teaching. So I just wanted to bring that into the, because people very often will say, oh, well, you know, you're adjunct, you're only spending a couple of hours a week in the classroom. You know, you should be happy for what you get. And there's a lot of hidden work in there.
Dana, you're sort of smiling as you hear Claire talking, because it sounds like you've heard this before. I'll ask you, what about the grading and the preparation time, and whether that goes into an adjunct professor's compensation for their
absolutely
work?
Not. Absolutely not. And so I spend 3 hours a week in the classroom, and I spend 7 hours outside the week prepping or grading or some combination thereof before the semester even begins. Last fall, for instance, I put in 41 hours for one class before the semester started. I put in 24 hours on another class that I've taught before, but I was, you know, changing it up and trying to keep it's social media, so I was trying to keep up with the social media trends. And then another one that got canceled, I put in 11 and a half hours, knowing that it might get canceled. I didn't want to put too much time in. And it got canceled a week before it was to run, so I didn't put in the rest of the prep work. But that's 11 and a half hours that I'll never see pay for. And never mind the other, you know, the other classes. Yeah, I got paid during the semester, but not that prep work. Nope.
Dan, another point that Claire brought up was working people who were working full time for an institution and then wound up being essentially fired or laid off and then winding up back as adjuncts. And That's something that you hear about in other lines of work as well. You might hear of someone who's been working for a company full time and then they end up being rehired as a contractor after being let go as a cost-saving device. How often have you heard of that happening?
So it doesn't happen very often, and when it does, it usually doesn't happen by design. So Claire described something that, as I understood her description, I would think of as an almost less than ethical administrative practice, and that is terminating a number of full-time people with the intent of turning around and hiring them back to do the same job and being paid piecemeal for it. And our association focuses on ethical practices and leadership, and so that would be a particular practice that we would find rather objectionable. I don't think it happens very often. I wouldn't say that it never happens because we've run across a number of problematic situations in higher ed. But if I could, Brady, I'd like to address this notion of the salary really briefly for just a minute. So to leave the issue of pre-course preparation out and come back to that for a minute, typically in the United States, adjuncts get anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 to teach a three-credit course. And I know some places pay less, a few pay more, but that's the typical range. So if you think of a three-credit course, it means 3 hours a week for 15 weeks, that's 45 hours. We've got a pretty well-accepted standard in higher education for both students and faculty, and that is that you spend 2 hours of individual work for every hour that you spend in the classroom. So for a faculty member, that's prep work, and that's evaluation work, grading papers, grading exams. So that's 90 hours over 15 weeks. If we think of even 1 hour a week of office hours, actually it would be student consultation because most adjuncts don't have an office. So that's a total of 150 hours for a three-credit course for a full semester. If you're paid $3,000, that's $20 an hour for your work. If you're paid $5,000, that's $32 or $33 an hour for your work. Places are paying faculty for work outside of the actual teaching. It's just that it doesn't get recognized that way. So at 20 hours a week, if you had a full-time job out in the workplace, it'd be $40,000 a year. It wouldn't be a full-time faculty position because they don't equate. But
I'm just going to have to cut you off there, Dan, because we are coming up to a break. That's Dan King, President and CEO of the American Association of University Administrators. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Brady Carlson. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Send us an email before the show about the stories of the week you've been following at exchange@nhpr.org, or you can find us on Twitter or Facebook. Today, we're looking at the roles of adjunct professors, and you can join us by calling in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-6477. Just before the break, we were talking with Dan King, President and CEO of the American Association of University Administrators, and he was breaking down some of the numbers of how much work might go into a class and then what that breaks down to if you look at the work. And Dan, I wanted to give you a chance to just wrap that thought up before we continued.
Well, thanks very much. So as I was saying, the salaries themselves, the hourly salaries themselves, are adequate, and I think that's not the issue. The issue is how we treat adjuncts and how we value adjuncts and the conditions for work that we give them.
Well, Dan, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. We appreciate your time.
It was my pleasure. Thanks very much for inviting me.
That's Dan King, President and CEO of the American Association of University Administrators. Also with us this hour, Dana Biscotti-Miskowski, adjunct professor at UNH Manchester. She's been an adjunct for 11 years, and she teaches media and screenwriting classes. And Colleen Flaherty, faculty reporter for Inside Higher Ed. Now joining us is Bill Gillett, dean of the School of Business at Southern New Hampshire University. He is part of the conversation as well. And Bill Gillett, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Brady. Thank you for the invitation.
Now, Southern New Hampshire University has talked a lot. Your president, Paula Blank, has talked a lot about reinventing higher education, disrupting some of the typical models of how we do higher ed. How does that idea coincide with what we're talking about today and the role of adjuncts?
Well, it If you think about access to higher education, adjuncts play an important role in that. One of the things that you haven't talked about too much on the show yet, I think, is there are a number of people who are looking for full-time work who are acting as adjuncts. But adjuncts also are utilized in other ways, including bringing an important perspective into the classroom. A number of our adjuncts are practitioners. There are people who are working in fields, and they come in because they will teach, like to teach on a part-time basis, like to interact with students, and they bring an important perspective in terms of what's happening in a particular industry and really to keep on the cutting edge of that industry.
And how is it possible then to reconcile the concerns that we've heard during this hour with that idea that you want to leave room for the flexibility, you want to have room for these practitioners who are working elsewhere, but you also want to make sure that the people who are working as adjuncts at multiple schools are able to do so and be able to make a living and have the institutional support they say they need for their students?
Sure, and there are ways to address some of those concerns. It's certainly true that across the board in higher ed, the finances are always going to be an issue. But some of the things that I've heard so far, I think we have addressed, certainly at Southern New Hampshire University. For example, we do provide adjunct offices, and they're shared offices, but they are spaces where adjuncts can meet with students, where they have an opportunity to use that as continuing space available to them. Recently at SNHU, we did survey our adjunct faculty to see what they were looking for in terms of, what would make their work experience better, what would make them stronger participants in the university community. In response to that, we have added some opportunities for dependent tuition for adjuncts. In other words, tuition benefits for their children and other dependents. We have looked at the opportunities that we can provide in terms of professional development for adjuncts, meaning some training and opportunities for them in that way as well. And there's a few other things that we've looked at, but in terms of what we think we can do from a financial standpoint, those seem to be the biggest concerns that adjuncts had.
Dana, you had started to reach out to fellow adjuncts across the state in the same way to try to find out what their needs are and what their concerns are. Have you started to get responses back?
I have started to get responses back, and I'm finding that most of them are concerned about pay and also this education for self, spouse, or child, which, like I said, seems like a no-brainer kind of that's a product that the universities already offer and, give us a couple of seats in a couple of the different classes. But, yeah, they're looking for that. They're looking for health benefits as well and office space. So it sounds like maybe they should head over to SNHU and apply.
Well, we have a lot of callers waiting to join in this conversation. Let's start going to them now. Zach is calling from Concord. Hi, Zach. You're on the Exchange.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on the deleterious effect that this has on research. When you've got adjunct professors, your upperclassmen, especially your graduate students, can't really rely on them for being there or having access to facilities to help with long-term research projects. And I don't think there's a recognition about that, that if you just have a lot of older tenured professors but all the young people are adjuncts, you don't really have a department.
It's a great question, Zach, and I'll turn that one to you, Colleen. The idea that with a growing reliance on adjunct professors, that could have an effect on research, not just right now, but certainly 20 or 30 years down the road.
Yeah, I think that that's just right. For every adjunct that doesn't get a tenure line position, I mean their research, I guess we can assume gets lost. And there's another point about research too that a lot of adjuncts make. There's this idea traditionally that a university professor, what makes them great is that they are on the cutting edge of research, and they take that research then into their classroom and share it with their students. So if you have classes full of students who are getting taught by professors who really know their field well, you know, obviously because many of them have PhDs, but who haven't been engaged in research for a long time because there's just no time to do it and they have no, you know, no one's funding them to do it. You know, that piece of higher education, which for a lot of people is fundamental, is also lost.
That was a great question. Thanks so much for the call. Let's take another call now from Michael in Keene. Welcome, Michael. You're on the Exchange.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Some years back, we noticed adjunct faculty at Keene State College had not received a pay increase for approximately 12 years. We proceeded to do a card signing campaign. We affiliated with the NEA of New Hampshire. They supported our efforts to become a bargaining unit. And we had to go all the way to the New Hampshire State Supreme Court to be approved to be a bargaining unit. But I would encourage all the adjunct faculty listening to this program to consider forming a bargaining unit, because it's hard to be a single voice. It's much easier to be a group and to negotiate with your colleagues for an appropriate and effective contract that will offer many of the things that I've heard discussed in today's program. And that's my comment.
Well, thanks for joining us, Michael. We appreciate it. Dana, adjuncts have unionized at a number of schools in New Hampshire. There's Plymouth State is one, New Hampshire Technical Institute, and UNH Durham. What kind of changes, if any, have we seen as a result of that for the adjuncts in this state?
Well, we have seen some pay increases, but one of our adjuncts who responding to the survey, because I am asking, you know, do we want to organize and are you willing to help me in that effort? And one adjunct responded that he was at Keene State when they did organize, and what he found was they actually, administration kind of got around the pay increase by increasing class sizes. And then he said that his summary was that he actually was receiving less pay per student overall and finally left, was fed up. So at UNH, you know, that's one of the conversations that we'll have. And actually, you know, UNH Durham, the lecturers have just recently passed union. But adjuncts are not unionized at Durham. So I'm trying to parse this out and figure this all out. So we're actually talking tomorrow to see if there's a combined effort that we could do both Durham and Manchester campus of adjuncts.
Michael, thanks so much for that call. Colleen, I saw on the website Gawker.com, they said of National Adjunct Walkout Day, in effect, that some colleges and universities have inadvertently created a big opening for unions because, as the writer put it, adjuncts were, quote, smart enough to understand the benefits of a union and, I'll just use a euphemism here, angry enough to want one. Has that turned out to be the case in other parts of the country?
Yes, actually, it has. There have been, you know, your I guess traditional higher education unions organizing tenure line faculty and adjuncts, often within the same units for a long time. But within the last couple of years, there's been a lot of adjunct specific union movement on the part of Service Employees International Union. They started here in Washington, D.C., organizing adjuncts at different campuses across the city. In the eventual hope that they would be able to sort of create a citywide union where adjuncts could, you know that from institution to institution, their pay is going to be the same. And, you know, maybe even SEIU down the line, I think their hope is that they could begin to somehow offer benefits to instructors. That idea really took off. It's now in Boston, San Francisco, Seattle, L.A., St. Louis, other places. Adjuncts are really responding to this idea that, you know, they don't need to rely, I think, on tenure line faculty to form their unions, and they don't even necessarily need to rely on traditional higher education unions.
Bill, is that something that the colleges and universities as a whole need to take notice of, that essentially that if they aren't starting to take their own steps to address some of the concerns that their adjuncts have, that the solutions might come from outside, that you might see unions come in and start to make those decisions essentially happen in a different way?
Certainly, Brady. I think that there is a lot of attention being paid to the use of adjuncts and adjunct pay and the issues that you've been talking about. And the universities and colleges are certainly aware of it and are certainly looking for ways to be responsive. It does come down quite frequently to financial issues and the ability to pay for everything that students are looking for. I think the issue One of the issues that was raised in the discussion of Keene State is class size. One of the things that adjuncts do is allow us at a number of schools to keep class sizes smaller, which obviously benefits the students. But the reaction is that there has to be a response to these concerns, and how much room do we have to be responsive?
Let's take one more call. Kurt is in Ware. Thanks for joining us today, Kurt. You're on The Exchange.
Yeah, hi, Brady. I want to bring up something I think is extremely important that hasn't been attacked yet, and that's the problem with grade inflation because of students being able to do the evaluations. I was a full-time professor for 33 years, but I also taught as an adjunct in five different local colleges, including the ones around Manchester that you've been talking about. And I've actually seen it firsthand any number of times. And one example was I was on sabbatical one year, and a person replaced me as an adjunct. And later when I came back, I saw that the grades for those exact same students that I'd had were much, much higher than the ones that I'd given out. And also, when I had worked as an adjunct at other schools, sometimes I'd be teaching a similar class and giving out similar grades to the ones in which I was giving in, as a full-time teacher. And those students would complain to the administration. Sometimes I actually got phone calls from them. So there was pressure on me to raise the grades because the students knew that I was an adjunct. And I also had a friend who was an adjunct that at one of the local schools was pressured to raise his grades. So when adjuncts don't have anything like tenure or guarantees or security, it's not that hard for students and administration to pressure them. And I hate to see the higher education go in the same direction that American high schools have, where standards have been lowered and education hasn't gotten better. That's a concern I have, and I wanted to bring it up.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Kurt. We appreciate your time. Before we wrap up the program, and not to dismiss Kurt's questions, because they're certainly good questions, but just in the interest of making sure that we get to the all we need to get to before the end of the hour, I just wanted to ask each of you what you would like to see happening in the near term when it comes to issues around adjuncts, their compensation, their benefits. What, Dana, I'll start with you. What would you like to see happen in the immediate future here in this state about adjuncts?
I would love to see a conversation that actually results in some better working conditions for adjuncts. And maybe we become a tiered union or something, but a group that has some contract kind of offerings, you know, maybe a 3-year contract to teach so many classes, you know, some benefits, some office space, yes, better pay.
Bill Gillett, you mentioned some of the things that SNHU has been doing in response to the feedback that you got from adjuncts, but what else would you like to see going forward?
Well, adjuncts are an important part of the university community, and I'd like to be able to maintain that and to make sure that adjuncts get what they need in order to continue to teach, to provide new perspectives, and quite frankly, to provide us with some flexibility in addressing class sizes, in addressing new classes that students are looking for, and addressing fluctuations in enrollment. And so a fair working situation for adjuncts is essential for the health of higher education.
And Colleen Flaherty, as someone who covers this full-time, what would you like to see happen? What kinds of questions would you like people to be talking about as we see this growing attention on the role of adjuncts?
Well, you know, I'm just a reporter, so there's nothing I actually want to see happen. But what I do see happening, actually, is, you know, so far we've talked about adjuncts and tenure-line faculty. And what I see happening at an increasing number of campuses, still the, you know, vast minority of campuses, is, you know, sort of what Dana talked about and what Bill talked about, too, ways for institutions to address these problems while still maintaining some degree of flexibility, because there's a lot of skittishness around tenure right now on the part of, you know, administrators. So rather than adding, let's say, you know, all new tenure-track faculty lines for everybody who's an adjunct, institutions are starting to create 3 to 5 year longer-term contracts for adjuncts. And getting to Kurt's question a little bit, in these solutions, talking about much more comprehensive means of evaluation, because obviously anybody who's ever looked at ratemyprofessor.com knows that student evaluations are less than objective, right? So, you know, and then other institutional support. So we see in some of these agreements, you know, small amounts of money for professional development. So I don't think that that's a solution for every adjunct. There are many who would like the, you know, institution to switch entirely back to tenure for everybody. But I think people who are thinking a little bit more realistically are, you know, both on adjuncts and administrators are increasingly looking to these longer-term contract models that we see at the places like the University of Denver, the University of Michigan, and several other institutions.
Well, Colleen Flaherty, I'll thank you so much for your time, and I'll also say a big thank you to Bill Gillett and Dana Biscotti-Miskowski. Thanks for each of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brady.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Jason Moon. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Dylan Morrill. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Brady Carlson, in for Laura Kanoy.